Not a single one of us can imagine what it would be like to walk with Jesus, to be with him day by day through his three-year journey as he was here in his ministry, to be able to see him as he interacted with others, as he could discern their hearts, know what their intentions were, and as he went right to the issues with them. None of us can imagine what it would be like to watch Jesus as he reached out to heal people, or how he would take those loaves and fishes and divide them in such a way miraculously that those thousands of people could sit and eat. Likewise, none of us could really imagine what it would be like to learn directly from Jesus. Imagine what it would be like to be able to watch Jesus, and as you're going through your day's journey, to be able to come to a point in time where you ask Jesus a direct question, and Jesus is going to give you an answer. What a wonderful thing that is. Now, the closest that we come to that today is, of course, in our Bibles. So in our Bibles, we can open it up and we can hear and we can experience from the written word. We can see what Jesus was doing, and we can learn from the interactions that others had with him. But we ourselves can't have that personal type of direct revelation from Jesus as he did with his disciples. In John chapter 9, his disciples are going to ask a very good question about a situation that was all too common in that day and age. A man had been born blind. Now, there many ailments would be from birth on, and many other things would happen later in life. But the Jews were of a particular mind and mindset and thought. For example, there's the notion that we have this good thing that is going to be rewarded, and if we do something that's sinful or evil, we're going to be punished. Now, the principle of that holds true even today for us, because if we do something that's wrong, we do stand the risk of having a punishment. But the Jews took it a little bit too far, and particularly Pharisees, and they began to think on this notion that if a person was born with a physical deformity or an ailment, in this case, a man who was born blind, the Jews would be of a mind that somebody had to sin in order for this thing to happen. And that's what we find here. It's a teachable moment. As Jesus is walking with his disciples, he finds a man who is born blind. He's been blind since birth, and now he is there, and the disciples are coming up to Jesus, and they say, "All right, teach us now, who was the one that sinned? Was it this man who sinned before he was born, or was it his parents who sinned, and the child bore the consequences of the parents' sin?" What a great question. What a great opportunity to learn. You see, we are robbed of that opportunity to be there directly with Jesus, to learn, to ask those direct questions and get the answers. But we're not robbed of the opportunity of reading what John had preserved for us. Tonight, as we go through John chapter 9, I'm going to be focusing more on what this man's progression of faith looks like, the blind man. And so there'll be some details we're going to just skirt over very quickly, and you can come and join us on our Wednesday night class in a few weeks when we get to John chapter 9, and we'll go into more detail. But for the time being, let's start with John chapter 9, and we're going to start with the first seven verses here as we think about this topic, One Thing I Know. Now, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay of the with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And then he said to him, "Go and wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. And so he went and washed and came back, and he was seen. So here we have, who is the one that has sinned, this man or his parents? And Jesus answered, it's neither. It's neither his man, the man or his parents who sinned, but this is something that you can learn from. It doesn't matter. It's not a direct correlation. Now, I know that there are direct correlations between parental sins. Like if your parents have been involved in some drug use or alcohol or some other things, there are some prenatal problems where the actions of the parents will directly be borne by the child. That's not what Jesus is talking about here. He's essentially telling his disciples that's not the point. The point is, look at who you're with, look at who can solve this problem, and then Jesus reaches down and he begins and he starts the process of healing this man. Now, we're going to see as his faith increases rapidly, Jesus is now spitting on the ground. We don't know how vivid this is, but anyway, he's making a little paste out of the mud. So he's taking some of the ground up, some of the dirt. He's combining his saliva with this. Now, us adults, we don't remember as kids we made mud pies or threw mud balls or whatever, but that's what he's doing. He's making this mud pack, and then he's reaching up and he's placing this on the man's eyes. Now, this is altogether unnecessary from God's standpoint, but he's making this as an issue here, and this is what he's doing to this man. And then he gives him a simple instruction, because his eyes are not healed at that point. He gives the man a simple instruction. He says, you need to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, John here also says this is translated sent. That's in parentheses. Those who have been in the John class on Wednesday night know that John is writing from a different perspective than the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And several times in the early chapters, John goes ahead to translate a word for us because he wants his audience to be as widely accepting of the message as possible. The Gospel of John is often noted as the Gospel of Belief. So this man is there. He's not healed yet of his blindness. As a matter of fact, we'll hear later that no one been blind since birth had ever been healed of his blindness. But now he's told to go and wash in this pool of Siloam, which he does. That's the beginning of his faith journey with Jesus. He's able to take what Jesus has done to him, and he's able to say, okay, I'm going to go and to do these things that you've asked me to do. That takes a measure of faith to do that. It really does. Now, let's go on to this next section, because I want us to step through these steps. So, first of all, we have this man who is willing to follow what Jesus says. Now, look at verses 8 through 12. Now, therefore, the neighbors and those who had previously had seen that he was blind said, is not this he who sat and begged? Now, we can infer from this a few things. One thing that we can infer is that this man not only was blind since birth, but he also had somewhat of a drag on the society around him. Kevin, I'm having a lot of trouble with this. You're going to have to go ahead and advance the slides. Just on each of these slides, if you can see it off to the left, just go ahead and fill up the full slide until we go to the next section. All right, so this man is here, and he is being questioned by his neighbor. So is this not the one who was sitting and begging? And someone said, this is he, and others said, it's one like him. And then he says, I'm the one. I am he. Therefore, they said to him, how then were your eyes open? And he answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And so I went and washed, and I received sight. And then they said to him, where is he? And he said, I do not know. So here is another progression in faith, because he doesn't yet know who he is as far as the Son of God, but he knows his name is Jesus. Now, this man has been cured of his blindness. We're going to find out in just a moment when it happened. It happened on the Sabbath day. We're going to find out also that the Jews were very concerned about this because Jesus did work on the Sabbath day. They're not as much concerned at first about the fact that he healed as the fact that he made this little clay out of the soil and out of his spit. Because by doing that, you were putting it together, working it together, and that's called kneading. It's called kneading. When we were in college, I called my wife-to-be, before she was my wife-to-be, and I said, I don't understand what this says. And she said, what? And I spelled it out to her. She said, well, it's kneading. And so she had to explain to me what kneading was. So anytime I come to this passage or mention that, we think back on that time, okay? So here's the man, and you can imagine what's going on. He's been blind since birth. Now he can see. And this man called Jesus has told him to go and do this marvelous thing. Now, who would think about doing that? I can't imagine going to Dr. Warner and Dr. Warner telling me, now listen, if you want to improve your eyesight, what you need to do is, I got some of this good old Alabama clay down here, and I'm going to mix that up, and I'm going to spit in it, and you're going to put it on your eyes. And I'm going to say, thank you very much. I'll see you Sunday. I'm going to another doctor. You know, that we wouldn't think of that today. But now listen, if I already had people that had gone through for this marvelous Dr. Warner mud treatment and they've been cured of their eye problems, guess what? I might have faith then to follow other people. This man has no one else to follow. He's got nothing to lose. So it's not much faith for him at first to allow Jesus to put this paste on his eyes and then to go and wash. But then his eyes were open, and for the very first time, he can see things. Have you seen those videos of that little baby that was fitted with eyeglasses and for the very first time could actually see his mother and ones around, his or her mother, I forget if it's a boy or a girl, no hair on the head, so I couldn't tell the difference, you know. But it's a marvelous thing because they have these goggle-type glasses and they're fitting it over this little baby and the head's going all over, and as soon as the goggles come on, it's like her eyes or his eyes were literally open. They could see for the very first time who it was that was speaking to them. We take our eyesight for granted all too often. Well, so we've had these two progressions. Now, he doesn't yet know that Jesus is the Son of God, but he knows him by name. Now, this next section we're going to go to begins in verse 13, and it's a much longer section. So we have two different slides on this. First of all, he's brought before the Pharisees to be questioned. So let's begin in verse 13. They brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now, it was the Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. And then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put clay on my eyes and I washed and I see. Now, this is going to be repeated over and over. This man has experienced a miracle. And what are people doing? They're all playing junior journalists. They all want to know, hey, can you tell us what happened? I've already told it, but I'll tell it again. This man made the clay, and now I wash that clay off, and I can see. Verse 16. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. And others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. Here's what's going on as far as the Pharisees with the division. On the one hand, you've got people saying, any person from God would not break the Sabbath to do this. On the other hand, you're saying, this is a bona fide miracle. This man is known by so many, and now he sees, how can he not be from God? And so there's a division that arises among the two of them. Verse 17, and they said to the blind man again, how do you say about him, because he opened your eyes? And he said, because he is a prophet. He said he is a prophet. Here's our next progression of faith. He is a prophet. First of all, it's this man, you know, he told me to do this. This man named Jesus, now he's saying he is a prophet. Now, this is all in a short span of time, and his faith is already growing. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. Talking about digging deep, boy, these guys are really out for it, aren't they? They're really looking to go deep and make sure that this is a bona fide miracle. So they asked them, his parents, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? And how then does he now see? Well, how do they know? They weren't there at the time, but apparently they have had some word from him, and he's been able to prove to them in some sense. So they say in verse 20, his parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means now he sees, we do not know, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. You go ask him. He will speak for himself. Now, being of age, if a Jewish male reaches the age of 13, there's a process that we know as a bar mitzvah where they go through a process of becoming an official adult. Up until that time, their actions really aren't accounted to them directly. But after the age 13, when they go through this process, if they do something wrong, they're culpable for those acts. And so that's a process of standing into manhood. So he's at least that old. And some have said he's probably in his 20s or his 30s. He's been out there begging, so he's been out of the home for a while. And the parents say, look, he's old enough. You go ask him. And also notice here, he says, for his parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, that is the Messiah, the anointed one, then he would be put out of the synagogue. So his parents are under this cloud of a threat. And what's happening is the Pharisees, the rulers of the Jews, are really exercising this authority. They're exercising this authority on others because they don't want Jesus to gain in popularity. So what are his parents to do? They weren't there to really witness it firsthand, so they're taking the safe route and saying, yes, he's our son, yes, he was born blind, but you're going to have to go and ask him yourself. He's of age, and by the way, don't ever challenge us with this because we like our place in the synagogue, and we don't want to be cast out. That leads us now up to this next section that begins in verse 23. 23, they said, go ask him. So they called again the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. Now, the phrase give God the glory is another way of putting a person under oath. All right, now we might say something along that line in reaction to something that's going on. Some good thing happens. For example, Laverne is back with us, and also Duel, thank you. I looked at you and immediately I forgot your name. That's terrible. And Duel is back with us, you know. So we ought to give God the glory that some of our people on the sick list have felt better and feel like coming back to be with us. That's wonderful. That's great. We ought to give God the glory. But this phrase is used not in that sense. This phrase is used in the sense of saying, you need to give God the glory. You need to start telling the truth now. All right? Give God the glory. We all know that this man is a sinner. How do we know that this man is a sinner? The Pharisees, regardless of what the facts are, they're split on this because they know that this man healed the man who was blind. Jesus healed the man who was blind. They know that that happened. Now they're divided. Either he's from God and this proves it, or because he did it on the Sabbath day, he broke the law and he can't be that. All right? So that takes us up to this point. Give God the glory. In other words, you better be telling the truth. And now in verse 25, he says, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, and there's the title for our lesson today. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. Though I was blind, now I see. For 40 years, except for a few months right when I got married, for 40 years, from age 3 to age 43, I wore glasses. I wore thick glasses. I wore the kind of glasses that when you looked at them from the side, you know, they were thick. And then when I was 43 years old, I went to a doctor in Nashville that did this LASIK surgery on me. And it was a wonderful, wonderful surgery. Lots of things to get ready for it, all these different measurements. I sat back in his chair. The actual procedure took maybe 5 minutes per eye. That's a lot of money per eye, you know, when they were doing that. But you know what? It was wonderful because later when I could take those things off, I could look out and I could see and I didn't have to have glasses. And after 40 years of glasses, that was a marvelous, marvelous freedom that I enjoy. This man is being able to see things for the very first time. Imagine being able to see what it was that was stinking in your house the whole time. And you couldn't find that. Have you ever tried to find something that's smelling and you can't find it? You're going through drawers or going through different house parts or in your garage and trying. He can actually see now what's there. He can see the faces of the people who have been guiding him around and helping him as he's been begging for what he's needing. So now he says in verse 26, they said to him again, what did he do to you and how did he open your eyes? Now this is getting very repetitive. So then he answers and said, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Here's another progression of faith, right? One thing I know, I was blind, but now I see. That's the one thing he's going to stand by, the fact that he was cured. I don't know if he's God or not. I don't know if he's from God. I know he's a prophet. I know he's able to listen. He told me to do this. I had faith in him. I did it, and I'm cured. One thing I know, and now do you also want to become his disciples? It's almost as if he's saying, I'm ready to follow this guy wherever he goes. That's what a disciple is, a follower. Whoever this is that's cured me of my blindness, I'm ready to follow him. Do you also want to be his disciples? And, of course, they're going to say no, right? They're going to say no. Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. We know that God spoke to Moses. And as for this fellow, we do not know where he is from. The man answered and said to them, why? This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. You see, the notion here is, don't you know this has to be from God? Nobody else is going to do these things except he be from God. Now, there's a passage over in Deuteronomy chapter 13, the first five verses. It's a great little passage. You could dig deeper in that later. But it's talking about what to do if a prophet or a person comes and says that he's speaking on behalf of God. And if he gives a sign or does something that's miraculous, what does he do when he does this and tells you to come away from God? Okay? Because there were a lot of people that had powers. And some would use those powers to try to drag people away from God. Well, you can imagine Moses is saying, you don't follow those people. You don't follow those people. Well, here we have where Jesus is healing this man, and he is obviously for God. All right, so we know that, so let's see, where do we get through? All right, so verse 31 then. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. All right, now this is one of the sections where we'll go deeper in the class. What do you mean God doesn't hear sinners? Okay, so come back for the class in a few weeks when we get on chapter 9. We'll go deeper into this. But notice now, this is an uninspired man who's saying this. This is a man who's been healed, and he's saying, we know that that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, then he will hear him. So you got to define a few of the terms here and know who it's coming from. This isn't Jesus saying that God won't hear your prayers unless you're a righteous person. Although we do have several sections in the scripture that tell us that if we behave in a bad way, it will hinder our prayers. So we've got to know that and also know that God hears and knows everything. All right, let's go on in this passage now. Verse 32, since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of the one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. That's our other passage here where his progression is faith. Faith is there. So we begin with this man, a man called Jesus. He is a prophet. And then we go through this process of one thing I know, he's healed me. Do you want to become his disciples? That's leaning towards following. If this man is not from God, then he could do nothing. That's a pretty solid statement that I believe that he is from God. Then they said to him, you are completely born in sins. That goes back to what the disciples were asking. Who sinned, this man or his parents? Goes right back to the fact that he was born blind. You were born in sin. You're not qualified to make these statements. And so what are they? He says, what are you teaching us? And they cast him out. They cast him out. We don't know now if this means that he was cast out permanently, because what he's doing is he's getting ready to profess that Jesus is the Christ. He's not said those words yet, but he's getting closer to that. So they cast him out. Now, there's a temporary ban where you could be banned from the synagogue for a period of maybe up to 30 days. There's a permanent ban where you're out for good. His parents were already concerned about it because of the collusion already saying that if anyone confessed that Jesus was the Christ, that they would be put out. Now, let's talk about this last section. Jesus is going to encounter him again beginning in verse 35. We don't know the time frame that's passed by in this section. But in verse 35, we read, Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe the Son of God? Do you believe in the Son of God? Nobody's taught him yet that Jesus is the Son of God. Nobody's taught him that yet. Do you believe in the Son of God? And what's his response? Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? Tell me who it is. I'm ready to believe. Now, this may have all taken place in one day or over a couple of days, but what Jesus is doing now is he's coming back to this man. He healed him, not because he was begging to be healed, not because he had professed a great faith and traveled a great distance so that Jesus specifically could heal him. He healed this man in part to teach his disciples about the power that God had rested in him, Jesus. And now this man is ready to be a believer. So Jesus answers in verse 37, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. And then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Lord, I believe. Now that's a fantastic progression of faith that we see in this one chapter. In the class on John, I mentioned a contrast between Nicodemus and the Samaritan woman. Nicodemus in chapter 3, the Samaritan woman in chapter 4 of John. And what we find is that Nicodemus, although he was educated, he was of the Sanhedrin, he was male, he was Jewish, he had all these wonderful benefits going for him. He was obviously interested in following Jesus because he came to Jesus at night, still very protective of his position as a Jew, but he wanted to learn of Jesus. And then we find Nicodemus two more times in the Gospel of John mentioned, once as he's arguing within his colleagues to say, we can't try the man, Jesus, without hearing his defense. And later we see him with Joseph of Arimathea as they claim the body of Jesus and wrap it up and put it into the tomb. So obviously Nicodemus's faith has grown, but it took a much longer time for that faith to grow from the time that Jesus is with him and says that you must be born again until the time that Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea claim the body of Jesus. But obviously, Nicodemus is wanting to be a follower of Jesus. Contrast that now with the Samaritan woman who comes to draw water in John chapter 4. And as she's there, she encounters Jesus who wants a drink. And here's this discussion that begins about him wanting to drink, and he doesn't have anything to draw water with. And the contrast is so stark between the Samaritan woman and the Jewish man. And as they converse, she is convinced that you are the Messiah. She runs and tells her entire village, her entire city. Turns out they go and go with Jesus. They listen to him. Jesus stays additional days. But they went initially to hear Jesus, and they believed him on the testimony of the woman, on her account. Then they come to the woman after they've heard Jesus directly. They said, "We no longer believe in Jesus because of what you said. We believe in Jesus now because of what he has told us." I want to tell you something. It's a great study to look at how often people are able to progress in their faith very quickly. This woman at the well, very quickly, all in one day. Her entire city, very quickly, within the span of 3 or 4 days. And they have progressed to where everyone believes in Jesus Christ. Do not underestimate the power of the message from God. Romans 1 and verse 16, Paul says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for his power of salvation to everyone who believes, the Jew first and also the Greek or the Gentile." That power is in your hands right now in that Bible. That power is already coded in there. That power is in the seed, the Word of God. As we mentioned this morning, you need to go and plant and water that seed and let God give the increase. Let God do his work. But God needs us to do our work as well. And never underestimate what somebody's response might be when they hear about the gospel message. Here's a man who's blind. What possible benefit can he have from listening to what Jesus has to say? Well, listen, Jesus didn't have to talk to him at all. He just said, "Do you want to be well? Here's some mud. I'm going to put it on your eyes. Now go over there and wash this stuff off and you'll be just fine." And he did. He made a believer out of it because of what Jesus could do for him. Do you know that our friends and family and coworkers and others that we know, that they can't sleep at night sometimes because they don't know? They struggle when they have a death of a close friend or somebody that they know, a family member. They don't know what happens when you die. They don't know the comfort that you and I know. They don't understand the love of God like you and I understand. Don't you see that if we can show that love and demonstrate that love and the peace that passes all understanding, if we can give that to them through our knowledge of the Word of God, as we're planting and watering those ideas into their mind, don't you see that they can see that that's a great benefit? They will see one problem solved and begin their progression of faith in believing in Jesus Christ. They're going to see that as a starting point. And they might be just like this man who was born blind, where his progression of faith rapidly increased throughout that day or 2 or 3 days to where he said, "Lord, I believe." This last sentence that's on the screen, I think, is fitting for us tonight as we close. Will our faith today grow in the face of such things as inquiry, people questioning us? Can we withstand that? Do we have answers for the questions that come to us? In the face of persecution, when our workplace tells us that we're not allowed to exercise our religion or to pray over our lunch or things like that, or ridicule when people say, "You know, that's outdated and old-fashioned and really doesn't make any difference anymore." I tell you what, I pray for our faith to increase more and more and more. I pray for our faith to be reinforced and bolstered by every sense of seeing God move in the lives of people around us. Seeing people who formerly had a life of sin, who finally found out that was a dead end, and they turned around, they repented. They accepted the same gift that you and I have accepted. And that's that gift of forgiveness and grace and mercy, salvation. They submitted to the same process that you and I submitted to. They called on Jesus as the Son of God. They said, "I confess to you before others right now, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I believe that my life of sin is wrong and I want to change that. I know that Jesus died for my sins and I want his blood to wash those sins away." It doesn't matter where you came from. What matters is where God wants to put you now. In the body, in the church, in the Lamb's Book of Life. What about your faith? Is it strong enough to progress like that? Do you have faith that God's message in the Bibles that you hold today can have the same effect on our friends, coworkers, and family members? I hope that you do. God has a song of encouragement listed for us tonight and prepared. And I hope that if you're struggling with your faith, that you'll not go home struggling with it, but you'll let us help as we find answers together. If we can help you through prayer, we can do that publicly here. We can all pray with you, surround you with love this very hour. Or privately, we'll be willing to sit with you and work through any problems that you're struggling with. If we don't know the answers, we'll find them together as we go into God's Word. And if you're here tonight and not a New Testament Christian, you need to. You need to become a Christian. You need to put on Christ. Christ died for each and every one of us so that we might become His ambassadors, taking up the commission, letting Jesus be manifested in our Bible for the very purpose of saving the world and reconciling the world to God. If you have need of coming tonight, come now while we stand and while we sing.